I took issue with them. I didn't think we should have gone into Iraq. The fearless conservatives thought it was a bad idea. Once we get there, you can't bug out.
What was so bad about going in and getting rid of Saddam Hussein?
It was wonderful getting rid of him. I'd like to get rid of a lot of dictators, but we can't send the U.S. military around the world to get rid of every dictator. The question was, was it necessary in the national interest? I didn't think it was. I didn't think at the time, because I said several times on this network that there were no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq.
How did you know that? And the President of the United States, the Vice President of the United States, were convinced that there were,
because my sources, I don't run my own CIA. My sources didn't think there were in the military, people I trusted, and the indications by the inspectors indicated there was no weapons.
Was the president sold a bill of goods on Iraq?
I think they did.
Individual that didn't hesitate to align yourself with the Office of Special Plans, Boy George, Rumsfeld, Cheney, the neocon, Big Oil, when they decided to go after Joseph Wilson for him exposing the lies that you claim you more or less knew were lies by the fact that from all evidence that you had supposedly gathered in your little fat head, you knew that there was no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Good night. There is no shame when the empire crumbles down from the seeds of its own destruction. You know what time it is. Save time. Listening to 103.3, 101.1, freakradio.org with Skid in Santa Cruz, 104.1 Berkeley, 107.5 North Carolina, LUVER.com, the world, radioforall.net, the universe. Check out the Slave website, just go to your Google and punch in Slave Revolt Radio, find out what time it is. Tonight, we're going to explore how Sam, in other ways, in all ways imaginable, is planting the seeds of his own destruction. We got all that and a hell of a lot more on 103.3. Slave Revolt.
Everything you know is wrong. Hello, seekers. Here we go again. And hello, especially to the skeptic inside you who might still believe.
You know, it's clear that an empire that has been so ruthless and callous and neglectful of its own internal subjects, and is so reckless in a way that it tries to expropriate out for profit every single cent for its own version of market empire building, will sooner or later help plant the seeds of its own destruction. Tonight we're going to explore just that and go through the whole process of this in a Ruins of Empire segment called Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. Jeff Smith is author of the book Seeds of Deception, and he has been a powerful writer on the genetically modified organisms that are planted deep within the food supply in America. We're going to explore this from various levels. What we eat, what it does to us who consume this type of food, what it is doing to the soil, and what it is doing, basically, to help plant the seeds of destruction for a barbaric empire as they destroy the land where they rape much of its profit from. So first off, let's hear Jeff Smith, author of the book Seeds of Deception, go into the mechanisms of the state that push for expansion of genetically engineered foods, so we can get a grounding idea of how this process really started booming. Check it out.
And so the first Bush convened Council of Competitiveness, headed by Dan Quayle. Yes. He's the one. And they decided to look at industries that they could promote to increase U.S. exports. And they identified genetic engineering as one of those industries. And so the White House told the regulatory agencies to promote the biotech industry. At the same time, Monsanto, which the New York Times described as having a legendary influence on government, they had been asked by their consultant, Arthur Anderson, to describe their ideal future in 15 to 20 years. And they described a world in which 100% of all commercial seeds were genetically engineered and patented. And Anderson worked backwards from that goal to create the strategy and tactics to achieve it. So here you have an industry, which is now five companies, creating genetically modified foods and crops. And you have a government with complementary strategies to take over the world's food supply. Pretty much. Not entirely. And so in this instruction to the FDA to promote the biotechnology industry, the FDA responded by creating a special position, a person in charge of policy when the GMO policy was being created. And the person they put in there was Monsanto's former attorney, Michael Taylor. He had worked with Monsanto and the industry before that to create the ideal regulatory framework for the industry, and apparently took a position in government to implement it himself. Now, under his leadership, the FDA policy stated that if Monsanto and the other biotech industries said that their foods were safe, the FDA has no further questions. In fact, Monsanto didn't even have to tell the FDA if it wanted to introduce a genetically modified food in the market, because they were in charge of determining if their foods were safe. That same Monsanto that told us Agent Orange was safe, that same Monsanto that told us PCBs were safe, that same Monsanto that told us DDT is safe, is the company in the United States that determines if its foods are safe.
Okay, so here we go again. This madness never stops. You know, at first I was going to, title this Seeds of Destruction. You know, this segment, Ruins of Empire segment, in classic slave form, play, you know, more ominous type music and on and on and on. But as I thought about it, this stuff is so silly and sick and bizarre. It plays out like a bad B movie. And that's where you get the title, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes. Because America is a bad B movie. And these little prophets of misery guys, they're just bad actors on the world stage. Pathetic little characters, trifling little human beings on the world stage, performing their little skits in a pathetic way, and it's recycled over and over again. Here, you can see how Monsanto, as Smith talked about, has legendary influence on the government. Now, where we've heard this before, as I've often talked about, all of these super powerful corporations, all of their lobbyist institutions have undue influence on the state apparatus where their particular interests are. That's why I've never really gotten into this whole aspect of looking at one particular lobbyist institution as the institution that all of us slaves need to focus all our attention on, that this is going to destroy the world if we don't get a grip on this particular, you know, AIPAC or whatever, you know. Here, the fish industry has undue influence. They're collapsing the fish supply in the ocean. The meat industry has undue influence through their corporate lobbying and PR machine. Here you have all types of, I don't even know if you can really call a lot of this beef, with all the bovine growth hormones and other things that are turning these cows into, you know, dinosaurs almost. And here with this genetically modified food, Monsanto, with their Seeds of Destruction script, with their over undue influence, just like what? The oil companies that influence the policies that Sam has and dictates basically the form or lack of transportation systems that we have on a community level. So here in the genetically modifying world, you see how the state collaborates with Monsanto in their attempts to be the dominant world food supplier of seeds and things of that. In the same way that they help push out the weapons suppliers of industry to be the dominant, the fossil fuel production companies to dominate. And where does all this dominating lead to? Conflict, destruction, turmoil, a flipping on its head of a natural collaboration amongst the regions of the world that is necessary if the species of the planet, meaning human species, are really going to survive. But see, that's not how these marketeers work. Now, here you have a situation where as Smith went into, the FDA basically rolls out the bloody red, white, and blue carpet to Monsanto and says, you guys tell us if it's safe. And if you tell us it's safe, we have no comment. This is madness. A company that was in the forefront of creating some of the most potent, deadly products the world has ever seen, and a company that lied all throughout the ages about them. PCBs, they claim was safe. Agent Orange, they claim was safe. DDT, they claim was safe. But now, without a blink of an eye, without the slightest bit of irony, just go ahead and tell us it's safe and it's all good. And we'll throw it right into the guts of the American population. This is, this just tells you how a nation in such contempt with its corporate entities, its powerful state backers, helped set the seeds of its own destruction. Now next, Smith outlines how the agency is declared not to detect any different differences from GE foods from non-GE foods. So let's see how this bad B-rated movie script plays out. Check it out.
Now, this policy was based on a single sentence within the policy which stated that the agency was not aware of any information showing that these foods were different in any meaningful or uniform way. The agency was not aware of any information showing that the foods were different. Years later, a colleague of mine sued the FDA, and 44,000 documents were made available, and the memos from the scientists commenting on the GMO policy were revealed. And these were summarized by the compliance officer, who stated, it is the opinion of the technical experts at the agency that these foods are different and lead to different risks. The memos had enumerated allergies, increase of existing toxins, new toxins, bioaccumulation of toxins from the environment, bioaccumulation of toxins in animals and dairy products, new diseases, antibiotic-resistant diseases, and nutritional problems, and that these problems would be difficult to detect by the manufacturers of the GM food, and therefore they had urged their superiors to require long-term studies. Remember that sentence. The agency is not aware of any information showing that these foods were different. And now the sentence, summarizing, it is the opinion of the technical experts of the agency that these foods are different. It was a deception. It was a complete lie. In fact, in my opinion, it was a violation of the law for a company to determine something as generally recognized as safe without the precedents that had been established up to that point of overwhelming consensus of scientific opinion and predominance of many peer-reviewed studies. So based on a deception, in my opinion, a violation of the law, that is why we're here, dealing with genetically engineered foods.
So once again, we have a situation where all of the typical safeguards for the draconian plunders, the corporate plunders of the planet, are being put in place so that they can run about with reckless abandon over the lives of the masses of people. They can get up there and lie about not knowing or detecting any differences between non-GE foods to genetically modified foods. Yet at the same time, a document comes out, well, 44,000 aspects of the document reveal that the foods are different. New toxins, allergies, bioaccumulated toxins, dairy related toxins, on and on and on. In the same way that the cigarette manufacturers just got up, lied, and then it skated off into the sunset. It was later revealed that there were over 10 ingredients within cigarettes that these cigarette bandits within the corporations didn't even bother to get approved. Now, if this doesn't show you the basic contempt that they have for humanity, all living beings have to eat. Yet, here they are playing Dr. Frankenstein with these foods, with no regard of the short-term or long-term effects, as long as they can have their short-term and long-term profits. And within the state apparatus, the way the whole institution, the PR machine is developed and belted out, the way the lobbyist machine is set up, and the way that the state wants to safeguard long-term and short-term dominant and penetration for the corporations within its particular society, you have the seeds of this destruction set up. And the seeds of destruction are based in the seeds of deception. They go hand in hand, just like their wars do. This is just another form of war. This is a war on your digestive system, a war on your health. And they use deception, propaganda, in the same way a couple of shows ago that Pat Buchanan was justifying deception, illusion, propaganda in a time of war, in this case in the Iraqi context, because you have to do everything necessary, is the same way that these corporate demons, these killer tomato corporations, are waging a war on the public, psychologically and physically. It's just a constant state of war for the subjects and the slaves of the earth. And it's more than clear when it comes to just your basic food that if you can't have a basic right to know that your food is not contaminated with who knows what that they've Dr. Frankensteined in, that these guys just have to go. It's time that we turn the switch off on this bad B-rated movie. Now, next here, Smith describes the issue of education about GE foods in Europe versus America. So check this out.
Now, the process of getting people to reject genetically modified foods was simple around the world. All it took was education. All it took in Europe was a skeptical press reporting on the potential health dangers or economic dangers or environmental dangers, but particularly health. People ask me, how come they're so concerned about genetically modified foods in Europe? Because they know about them. So I was reading the European press next to the U.S. press for many years. I was working as the vice president of marketing for a GMO detection laboratory. I was a spokesperson on technical issues on the subject and interviewed around the world. And I realized that most Americans had no idea what a genetically modified food was. And if they did, we probably wouldn't have this problem. So I was also aware that there was incredible material out there for a fun book. There was a scientist who went public with his concerns and was fired from his job after 35 years and silenced with threats of a lawsuit. There was a UC Berkeley professor who was threatened by a senior Mexican government official who allegedly implied, "We know where your children go to school," trying to get him not to publish information. There were Canadian scientists who testified before the Senate saying they were offered a bribe by Monsanto, that documents were stolen from their office, that they were being pressured to approve genetically modified products, that whistleblowers at the FDA were fired, stripped of responsibilities, and forced out. I think this is good material. And I figured I would use this information as stories and then weave the description of the science and the dangers into those stories. But I knew from some friends of mine who had put out a book that was critical of Monsanto and genetic engineering, that 3 days before their book came off the printer, their publisher received a threatening letter from Monsanto's attorney. And the publisher decided not to go ahead with publication. So I decided to hide the book from the industry and not accept an offer for publication, but publish it myself. So when I sent the proofs out a year ago in the summer, I'd shown it to very few people. And I was thinking it would have an impact, but I wasn't sure. Then I got my first call from a reporter, because I sent it just to media. And this is sort of how it went. He said, "I just started reading the book last night at 11 o'clock. It's amazing. I never did this before. My girlfriend's been telling me about this for years. This stuff is incredible. This is evil. They're terrible." You know, like, this was a reporter. He said to me, "You think I should write my congressman or senator?" He said, "I feel a moral responsibility to buy organic food from local farmers." I said, "How much did you read?" He said, "One chapter." 2 hours later, I got my second call. It was from an editor of a magazine. He said, your book is perfect for my readers. They don't want to eat genetically modified foods, but they don't know why. I want excerpts in every article, in every magazine I write. This is great. This is fantastic. I started reading at 11 o'clock last night. I never do that. I said, "How much did you read?" He said, 10 pages. That gave me an indication. I'm telling you this because what happened since September 1st of last year was that I've been on a continuous trip now. I've been to about 135 cities, some of them several times, in 16 countries on 5 continents, and this is my last talk in that marathon run.
Once again, you see many aspects of how degenerated things are. When Smith talks about how these reporters are calling him up and talking about how they've been shocked by his book and they want to know what to do, this is sad, because we've seen in the past, you know, like in the 30s and stuff like that, when authors have come up in the past with these types of conflicts of food or whatever, they do what authors and, you know, journalists did back then. They write stories or books about them, like The Jungle, which was about the American meat supply back in the day that, shocked many people in the nation. Now, unfortunately, it didn't shock them in a way of looking at the overall structure within this society. It shocked them into thinking just their stomach, but not the whole mechanism. But nevertheless, now, here you have people who are in the field of journalism, and they don't know what to do. That gives you an indication of how well trained these guys are. And as Smith led on, when previous authors had tried to write a book on them, they got neutralized. This is similar to, what were those cats' names? Steve and Jane Archer. They were assigned to be investigative reporters for Fox News, and one of their first story was going to be on growth hormones in cows and various related problems. You know, to make a long story short, they ended up getting fired because of the pressure that Monsanto's lawyers were throwing at Fox News. Fox News capitulated. They ended up winning in a lawsuit against Fox News, but the story was squashed, and people's information about the health effects, the dangers of drinking and eating products, dairy related, that especially have been thrust into a deadly kitchen soup of growth hormones added to them, was also burnt on the frying pan. See, so there's a whole mechanism at work, and it shows the spheres of influence. We're talking about people daily routine eating, often several times a day, especially in America. And for that basic thing, basic human right, to be subjugated. When I say basic human rights, if human beings don't have a right to eat non-polluted food, well then the party is over. But as long as we live in the land of the corporations that produce with autonomy these killer tomatoes, the party is coming to an end. Now, also to kind of align with this whole deadly process, there's a book called Fateful Harvest. It's by Duff Wilson. That's also worth looking into. And it deals with how basically everything under the sun by waste product companies is being dumped into fertilizer as a way of getting rid of it and not having to have to go through the normal procedures of proper waste disposal. I'm going to read a little piece out of the book, Fateful Harvest, to give you a step-by-step insight on this. It goes, the company had a dozen employees working to dispose of 4,000 drums of titanium tetrachloride, a liquid waste from the refining process. It sent some of them to the licensed hazardous waste landfills in Arlington, Oregon. The landfill costs were astronomical. Dennis carefully highlighted other parts of the report, showing qualities he could hardly imagine. 7,552 barrels of solid waste from the condenser process. 1,334 barrels from the filter systems. 250 barrels from the chlorinated process laced with radioactive zirconium, uranium, and iridium. 226,500 barrels of miscellaneous quote-unquote waste. Dennis shook his head as he slowly read the report. With his dyslexia, it took hours and hours. He found letters in the file between a titanium manager and a Department of Ecology official named Jim Maum. By 1986, the company had 17,256 barrels of condenser waste. Colorado experts on recycling heavy metals advised International Titanium they wanted to recycle 5 barrels of waste a day, every day, for 2 years until they were all gone. By recycling instead of storing the waste, the company would save $200 a day in the cost of a barrel alone. ITI also wanted to recycle 3,800 barrels of another waste by removing the hydrochloric acid and sending the radioactive residue to another company to extract valvadium. Now it goes on and on, but I'll say this part, continuing on. This is what they do. They dump it on the farmer, Dennis said. They're putting it all over the Columbian Basin, Patty said. The enterprise changed when Wyndham Gordon announced plans in 1987 to close International Titanium after just 3 years of troublesome operation. Now, what is taking place and has been going on for years is basically the future sterilization of the agricultural system in many parts of America, because these corporations have been allowed to dump some of the most toxic heavy metals and other chemicals and particles into this sludge factory and mix it in with what they call fertilizer, so that they don't have to do the proper storing of it. So from every aspect that one could imagine, them genetically modifying food, engineering food, without regard of the ramification, even though reports are coming out to the contrary, to these demons putting in products, heavy products, that are known to be deadly to humans and other species that consume them, and very detrimental to them. But just by a wave of the hand, being able to call them fertilizer, you have the making for, once again, the seeds of destruction within their own system. But they're so locked into a profit mode, the whole mechanism, everywhere you look, that just the stability of where they extract their extreme profits out of, they're willing to destroy it, which is the land. It's not enough that they steal the land and break down many of the local and small farmers, but then they plunder the land at the same time, making it a sterile death zone for future generations. Now here, Smith lays out the dangers of genetic engineering in the foods that occurred with the L-tryptophan outbreak, and how the FDA sided on this issue in this bad B movie called America. Check it out.
First, what happened in the 1980s? Individuals started going to doctors with a constellation of symptoms that the doctors have never seen in their practice. And the overriding symptom was intense pain, the worst pain that the doctors had seen in their careers. One person described how their legs blew up to the size of telephone poles and oozed water. There was progressive paralysis, where individuals eventually couldn't breathe without a respirator. People's hair fell out. There was a lot of mental problems. One person I spoke with was confined to bed for 6 months and took 2 minutes to turn from one side to the other because the pain was so intense. Well, because of a series of coincidences and because a little bit of the nature of this disease, they were able to find that there was an epidemic, because this was not a common thing, it was just scattered around the country. But they discovered that those who had this problem were taking L-tryptophan. How many people have heard of L-tryptophan? L-tryptophan is an essential amino acid. It's in turkey and milk naturally. But as the epidemiologist reported in a July article in 1990, it wasn't just tryptophan itself. It was a particular brand, one out of six, that were being imported into the United States. And it was a Japanese company that was genetically engineering bacteria to produce the tryptophan more economically. Now, this process can lead to a lot of unpredicted side effects, which you can talk about. And this particular batch, or several batches, had contaminants. And this was almost certainly the result of genetic engineering, and the contaminants were almost certainly the responsible for this deadly epidemic. It turns out about 5,000 to 10,000 people got sick. Some are still permanently disabled. About 100 people died. Now, the following month, after the first epidemiologist said in the article, this raises the question about the safety of genetically engineered foods. The FDA spokesperson in the next article said that this person should never have raised the issue of genetic engineering because of what it might do to the industry. This was an early indication of the side that the FDA was on and has remained on. In fact, it is their mandate to promote biotechnology. Well, there was a great and successful effort to divert the blame away from genetic engineering and claim that a change in the filter method at the factory in Japan in January 1989 was responsible for the epidemic. And this is what goes around the world. As I travel around the world, this is what comes back to me. However, we bring out new information in the book, which shows that hundreds of people got the disease during the 4 years prior to the change in the filter. And that the information had been withheld by the FDA from the public and from Congress. It's interesting that that same deadly L-tryptophan were first introduced today, it would get on the market. Because it's not treated any differently because it came from genetic engineering. But the real lesson I take from this epidemic was that the reason why we were able to discover that there was an epidemic in the first place and then trace it to a genetically modified supplement was because the disease had three concurrent characteristics. It was rare, it was acute, and it came on quickly. What would happen if all three characteristics had not been in place? What if it took 20 years for onset, or the next generation, it would still be on the market? What if it were non-serious symptoms like frequent colds or memory loss? Or memory loss? Maybe it's still on the market. What if it were serious symptoms that were common, like cancer or heart disease or obesity or diabetes? It would certainly not be discovered because it would be lost in the myriad of statistics we're now facing. So it begs the question, what of the thousands of products currently being fed to the U.S. citizens that contain ingredients from genetic modification? Maybe they're creating problems that don't have all three characteristics. Maybe they're responsible for the doubling of food-related illnesses in the United States between 1994 and 2001, corresponding to the times when a lot of these products were introduced. We don't know because no one is looking. One of the most unscientific statements made by the proponents of biotechnology is that millions of people have been eating them for years and no one has gotten hurt. Well, if you don't look, you won't find. And of course, there was those unfortunate victims of L-tryptophan.
Once again, you see the barbarity of this whole process and how it plays it out. The Japanese company is modifying L-tryptophan to do it more cheaply. It turns out that there's some problems in their process. It ends up devastating a number of people, killing a good number of people, but the whole machinery comes around to protect them and make up some excuses about the filter is what caused it, even though it doesn't even correlate with reality. The corporate media in America is not designed to investigate this type of stuff because they have to worry about important issues like, you know, a war on Christmas and all of that type of stuff. So these issues get obfuscated. And the corporate beast keeps on its deadly road, planting its deadly seeds throughout the world, genetically modifying at a mad rush pace, keeping a lot of this stuff clandestine, similar to, you know, Boy George's spying techniques, so that by the time many people find out, they've already saturated this whole process out. Deception, corruption, intimidation, destruction. That's what these killer tomato corporations are all about. The last thing they're concerned about is the masses of people's health. If you end up getting cancer, diabetes, or whatever, that's your problem. You know, then you have to run off and pay someone else. And if you don't have health insurance, then I guess you'll be paying the mortuary soon. I mean, this is the type of world we live in, with these bandits running amok. And it's it comes from all aspects of life of these corporate entities. Now, in this whole process of, as we've gone in before, you know, profit over people and how the mechanisms of death play itself out. In the book Faithful Harvest by Duff Wilson that I read to you a little bit a while ago, you know, some of the farmers, of course, found themselves caught within the matrix of fighting these barbarians who were putting these deadly products into the fertilizer and calling it fertilizer. And a number of them, when their lands were destroyed and were able to then produce the type of food that they did at the level, and plus on top of that it was contaminated, they found themselves on the chopping blocks for having their land taken away, because they of course fell behind on their mortgage and things like that. I'm going to read another little bit of moving on in this book about what happened with one of the people who was facing down Cenex, who was one of the deadly bargainers of this product out onto the farmers. And read a little bit of the judgment. Judge Cooper tossed out Dennis's lawsuit in May 1994. The judge ruled that Dennis hadn't proved damage to the land beyond 1991, when he could have taken it back and turned on the water and paid the mortgage. Therefore, Cooper ruled there was no real question or fact for a jury to decide. Cooper signed a decision that supported all of CNX's claims. That wasn't all. Cooper reproached Dennis for not paying the $130,000 promissory note for the CNX farm chemicals in the 1980s. The judge issued a summary judgment for CNX on the promissory note. CNX could not have received any better ruling. Dennis was devastated. He could hardly look up from the ground as he walked around his shop the next day. Hormel was surprised at the one-sidedness, the totality of the defeat. He immediately started work on an appeal. He told Dennis to get ready for a long wait, 2 years at least, and he warned him the appeals court almost never overturned a summary judgment. Now, hold on a second. Now, how... 2 years. The average Ma and Pa farmer can't wait no damn 2 years for a judgment. They'll go bankrupt. They often are living, season by season, going on with the article. So now CNX owned Dennis's land, and Dennis owed CNX $130,000 plus $79,000 in interest. So, once again, these guys are fighting it from the other end. It's all tied together. The genetically modifiers are tied together with these waste producers. Many of these waste producers come out of this whole, weapons industry. They don't want to pay for storage. They wave a magic wand, call it fertilizer, dump it into, some fertilizer industry. It ends up on... a farmer's land. He's unable, or she's unable, to produce food of quality anymore. They collapse. The corporations just ride off into the sunset. The people who do eat this product have no clue that they're eating products that are laced with heavy metals and other deadly products, just like in the genetically modified world. But the whole institution, the whole lobbyist institutions, the whole PR campaign, how the whole structure of this deadly tomato bad B movie is set up in America is not set up for the masses of the servants and slaves to understand or have a clue how deadly this system is. It can't be any more clear how deadly a system is when the system itself is not even designed to safeguard even the most basic fundamental rights of people, a right to have clean, healthy food. Now, going on, here Smith further expands on the corruption of these institutions and their polluting apparatus, and how this all ties in to a mechanism to further the goals of these killer tomato, literally, institutions. Check this out.
In the FDA, supposedly all the companies that introduced genetically modified products actually had a voluntary consultation process. This may not be true with the tobacco industry, which genetically engineered particularly strong tobacco in Brazil, but nonetheless, the food may have been all presented in this voluntary consultation process where they get together and chat about safety before they introduce their product. And the industry can bring the FDA anything it wants, summary data, conclusions. It doesn't have to show the actual raw feeding data. In fact, only one study, only one company presented raw animal feeding study data to the FDA because it was going to be the first genetically modified crop approved, the Flavor Saver tomato by Calgene. And they took rats and fed them their tomato, which was engineered for longer shelf life. It turns out the rats refused to eat the tomatoes. Now, I think they missed an incredible marketing opportunity. Are rats eating your tomatoes? Try ours. Even the rats won't eat them. So they force-fed the rats, and several developed stomach lesions. 7 out of 40 died within 2 weeks, and over the objections of the scientists at the FDA, the tomato was approved by the political appointees. And no crop has ever been subjected to that level of scrutiny by the FDA. In fact, if the FDA asks further follow-up questions to the company about their data, they're typically ignored. And then, at the end of the exercise, the FDA releases the letter. The letter states, Monsanto believes its foods are safe. It doesn't say the FDA believes the foods are safe. Monsanto believes its foods are safe. Now, when the Flavor Saver tomato was being evaluated, the Division of Anti-Infective Drugs was asked to evaluate the use of the antibiotic-resistant marker gene in the process of creating the genetically modified tomato. They were appalled. They said it would be a serious health hazard to introduce a gene that codes for antibiotic resistance into the intestinal flora of the general population. Can anyone guess why? They were concerned that putting a gene which confers invincibility to particular antibiotics into the diet could result in gene transfer into gut bacteria, mating with pathogenic bacteria, resulting in super diseases untreatable by antibiotics. Over the objections of the scientists at the FDA, the political appointees approved this process. And they apparently believed the biotech industry, which said, oh, don't worry, genes are destroyed during digestion.
Now that right there helps once again send it on home of how serious and how degenerated this whole economic order is. When you have a division of the anti-defective drugs openly state their concerns and be appalled by the whole process of transferring these genes and talk about how it's a serious health hazard, and how this type of stuff can create super diseases that it would be untreatable. And then all the corporations have to do is say, you know, that it won't pass through the whole digestive system. And then they just move on. You know, that's good enough for the FDA. No question. Once again, corporate media, overwhelmingly not an issue, at least in the States. This is seeds of destruction, based in seeds of deception. And when you have rats refusing to eat these killer tomatoes, this should tell people something. Now, you also had a situation where mother rats that were fed genetically modified soy led to a 56% mortality of their offspring. In a report on October 31st, 2005, in Arizona at the Conference of the American Academy of Environmental Medicines, held from October 27th to the 30th, the results of a Russian rat study were presented, in which an astounding 55.6% of the offspring of female rats fed genetically engineered soy flour died within 3 weeks. The female rats had received 5 to 7 grams of Roundup Ready variety of soybeans beginning 2 weeks before conception and continuing through nursing. By comparison, only 9% of the offspring of rats fed non-GM soy died. Furthermore, the offspring from the GM-fed group were significantly stunted. 36% weighed less than 20 grams after 2 weeks, compared to only 6.7% from the non-GM soy control group. So, once again, studies are coming out. Now, these aren't studies that are led by these corporations, because the fix is in. They have it set up for them to not have to present honest, accurate evidence, because it's only our health. It's just the subject's health, the slave's health. Who cares? This is not something for them to concern themselves about. These killer corporations with their killer products, whether it's in a weapons manufacturing industry or even the food that they produce, anything they produce, since they have the whole ideology of profit over people, will always, in the end, produce a product that will be deadly for the masses. This is how they operate. This is their mentality, to put profit over the overall health of the masses of people. Now Smith describes the Russian roulette game played out by these anti-resistant marker genes that Monsanto is unleashing. Check this out.
Describe how and why they use the antibiotic-resistant marker gene. And in this context, I'll explain how they create a genetically modified crop. Let's say you want to create a crop that produces its own pesticides. Typically, you'd go to a soil bacterium called Bacillus thuringiensis, or BT. You take the gene out of there, which creates the BT. You make some changes in its genetic code so it works in plants as well. And you add a promoter to turn it on. Because if you just stick it in there, normally the cell interacts with its own genes to indicate what should be turned on to what level as the needs of the cell dictate. But we don't speak the language of the DNA, so we put an artificial on switch which turns it on full volume 24/7 around the clock. That's called a promoter. We put an antibiotic resistant marker gene in there and multiply this genetic cassette thousands of fold, put it into a gene gun, shoot it into thousands of cells, hoping that some of those genes make it into the DNA of some of those cells. But you can't tell which ones make it. You can't look under a microscope, so you douse the whole thing with antibiotics, killing them all, except for the few that got the gene into the DNA. And so the antibiotic-resistant marker gene is producing a protein which renders the cell invincible an antibiotic. And that's why it's used. That's the only time it's used, but it stays in the food. Are the genes destroyed during digestion? The only human feeding study ever conducted, they took 7 human volunteers, and these volunteers had colostomy bags. They had their lower intestines removed. Not for the study. Although I wouldn't put it, no. And they fed them genetically modified soy burgers and a soy milkshake, looked in the colostomy bag, and they found up to 4.7% of the genetically modified DNA had survived, which was far more than they thought would survive. And that's not all. In three of the seven volunteers, the gene that had been inserted into the soy to make the soy bean herbicide tolerant was now in the DNA of the gut bacteria before they were fed the meal, from a previous meal. It was there on a stable basis.
So once again, we see a whole situation where the Russian roulette game, and this game of death, and it's a Russian roulette game where basically all you're doing is spinning the cylinder, but all six chambers have bullets in it. It's not the Russian roulette game where there's one bullet in the chamber. All six have it, you know. So it's a game of death that ends in death. But this is how these killer tomato industries operate. Now, when you have a situation where you're producing crops that produce their own pesticides, and the process that you have to do this, of shooting the genes in and all of this type of genetic coding manipulation, and turning on a promoter, and you don't, and we're not at the point in human history where we can even control the quote-unquote promoter to where it goes on and off at a given time. It could just be on full bore all the time. Of course, it's more than obvious that we're years away from really being able to manipulate this whole process in any kind of safe way. Now, that's for those who believe in the whole concept of this genetic manipulation stuff. But for those who don't, the whole idea of doing this madness without even having a firm grip on where it's going to lead, this shows the whole callous disregard of the whole system. So even those who promote genetic engineering and try to spin it as some kind of, you know, thing that's going to help feed the world, even though we all know that it comes down to how much money you have, and you have a place like there's millions of people starving in India, even though India is the second largest producer of food. So the fact that you can produce a lot of food out of your particular nation, region, or whatever, doesn't mean it's going to go into the people's stomachs in that region, because there's a market order that says he who has can get. We have all types of homeless people and people who are malnourished in this country, even though there's excess food. You see people walking around all the time, hungry as hell. And they're walking right by stores and restaurants that have an abundance of food. So this is just a mind game. In the same way that they spin a mind game that we're supposed to believe in their technology because of their PR campaign that tells us that what they say and the findings that they say, which is just related to how much they want to make a product on a particular product, is in our best interest. Once again, it's just another mechanism of profit off the people and against the overall masses of people's interests. Now next, let's go back with Smith as he digs right back into what Monsanto is saying and doing on the ground. Check it out.
Let me give you a little background about this soy. Monsanto found some bacteria growing in a dump site behind their factory that wasn't dying in the midst of Roundup herbicide, so they figured, hey, let's put it in the food supply. So they took the gene, which conferred invincibility to Roundup herbicide, and put it into the soy, so now you can spray the soy plant and it won't die, but all the biodiversity around it, or weeds, will die. So you just spray over the field, and it's a technique for farmers to use to save labor and to manage weeds. Now that gene, which was in the bacteria in the dump site put into soy, is now inside the DNA of the gut bacteria of 3 of the 7 human volunteers in the UK, where they don't eat a lot of genetically modified soy. So we don't know the percentage of the people in the United States that have this in their gut. So what are the medical implications of this? First of all, it shows that genes do transfer to gut bacteria. The government, the UK government, which paid for this study, did not follow their pro-GM, and they did not follow up to see if the antibiotic-resistant marker genes in GM food also transfer to gut bacteria. We know that genes do transfer. In fact, the way that they make a gene, they put bacterial genes in there. They use bacterial plasmids to create it. So now you have bacterial sequences in the crops, in the vegetable crops. And you have bacteria in your gut. One of the ways that gene transfer is facilitated is if the genetic material is similar between the bacteria. So there's a normal barrier between transferring of genes from plants into bacteria because they have different styles, different types of genetic sequences. But with these transgenes that you put in, you have bacterial DNA. And so it may facilitate making it very easy to transfer. So the process of transferring may not normally take place except in genetically modified crops. We don't know.
So once again, you can see how with all of this manipulation and this rush for profit that has to be based in, from their perspective, deceit, that things are pushed at such a fast pace with reckless disregard for the masses of people that no one knows the short or long-term outcome. But all the evidence is showing devastation in various apparatus, and there's a number of empirical evidence showing things going haywire. But in this machinery, we can't wait. Must move on. This again helps outline the whole process and dynamic of a machine that does not have the interest of the masses. When you have a situation where the transgenes that these guys are manipulating in, and how this whole process with the bacterial DNA is helping break down the wall that humans have historically had from transferring certain products when they eat, you know, plant material into their guts. But that wall is being broken down because of the manipulation that they're doing. They know it, but it's all about profit. Once again, you can see the seeds of destruction taking place. The same way that they're polluting Iraq with weapons of mass destruction, you know, white phosphorus, depleted uranium, the same way that they're polluting the soil of America with their contaminated fertilizers, the same way that they let the contaminated waters of ocean sand seep into the districts of New Orleans, creating a toxic soup in that region. All of this, without a blink of an eye, is the same way that they are polluting many unsuspecting people's guts internally as they eat their dirty, deadly product. Because all they produce in this bad B-movie is a deadly product. Now, in a report about the BT Mazzi corn during pollination and how it's basically polluted people in cornfields. In an article about this, it stated that, quote, virtually an entire village of 39 people living adjacent to a large field of BT, Madzi, on the island of Mindanao in the Philippines were stricken by a disease with respiratory, intestinal, and skin reactions and fevers. The symptoms occurred during the period when the Madzi was producing airborne pollen. The residents, some of whom live only a few meters from the plants, certainly inhaled the pollen. The Madzi was genetically engineered to produce the insecticide called BT in response to BT toxins, IgA, IgG, and IgM. Antibodies were detected in the blood samples, indicating an immune reaction to GM Madzi pollen. Local authorities had proposed that the disease was infectious, but could not identify the cause. The symptoms of four families, however, subsided after they left the area to stay with friends or relatives. Upon returning, the members of all four families once again exhibited the symptoms. Such a response contradicts the claim that the disease was infectious and points to environmental causes. The Norwegian Institute for Gene Ecology learned about the incident during the fall of 2003 and arranged for blood samples to be taken in October. The IgA and IgM reaction in their serum indicates a recent exposure to BT within the previous 3 months and are consistent with the interpretation that the diseases might have been created by inhalation of the BT pollen from the field. The Madzi variety DCLAB 818 was popular in the area, according to the members of the village. Seed representatives offered them an improved version of DCLAB 818 called DCLAB 818YG. This is a hybrid between the MON 810 and BT crop from Monsanto and the conventional DCLAB 818 variety. This past year was the first time that BT Madzi was planted in the region. Some villagers said they were never told it was genetically engineered variety and did not know that it was creating its own pesticide. An additional finding from the study showed that the level of expression of the BT toxin CRY1AB variety considerably in the corn kernels, even from the same plant. The levels range from 0.014 UG to 0.9 UG, with other kernels expressing levels both above and below the limits of detection of the study. So once again, we see example after example of what's happening. These people weren't even eating this junk. But the pollen, see, you can't escape from what these bandits are doing in their genetically modified world. They're in the same way that they're socially, politically, and genetically engineering the landscape, the psyche, the politics, the wars for their benefit, is the same way that they're doing it to the food supply. And the results are the same. Death for the masses until it's death for them. Now let's go back to the soy issue and what may be a product of consuming it, as Smith lays out. So check this out.
If the FDA, when they were to introduce the first genetically modified bovine growth hormone from Monsanto, injected into cows to increase milk supply, the scientists who were concerned about its effects on health were fired, stripped of responsibilities, or forced out. The remaining whistleblowers had to write an anonymous letter to Congress claiming that there was fraud and conflict of interest at the agency. The milk from treated cows has higher levels of IGF-1, which a number of studies linked to cancer. However, the FDA's official statement, which they suggest that's written on the side of cartons that would dare to label something as not from cows injected with RBGH, is that there's FDA shows no difference between the two. even though their own studies show that there is a difference. Now, what about the crops? They're the most well-known. Well, the FDA in 1992 put out their policy. And the policy states, the agency is not aware of any information showing that these foods differ in any meaningful or uniform way. It gives the impression that hundreds of scientists went out looking for differences and couldn't find any. And on the basis of this statement, they said, no testing necessary. No long-term safety testing, no short-term safety testing, no notification necessary. Which means if you create a genetically modified food in your basement laboratory, you can sell it in the United States without telling the Food and Drug Administration. And that is the basis of U.S. policy, and it's been repeated over and over again by U.S. trade representatives and senators and congressmen and ambassadors.
So once again, we see how diabolical this whole process is. They wave a wand, say it's all good. They don't even have to give notification. No testing necessary. Now, you want to try to, you know, vote in this sorry country. Not that it's do you any good, but nowadays they make you run through all types of hoops. In certain areas, they want two identifications with pictures on it. Yet, you try to, for those who want to put out a product with all the hallmarks of destruction at hand, all these different reports that have come out independently, and some of their own internal stuff that they've withheld, showing the destruction for those who consume their products and the destruction of the soil where it's being planted. No verification necessary. No notification necessary. Here they want to spy on every move the masses of people make. Yet when it comes to corporations making as much profit as possible, they don't have to worry about the NSA, Boy George, or any of these other clowns looking over their shoulders. Even though these guys are the genetically engineering terrorists on the real scale. This is food terrorism. This is ecological terrorism. If you're in the Philippines and you're getting sick because some mad dog start engineering some products in the corn and you didn't even know about it because, you know, you're just some peasant, you know, of the world stage. And in this bad B movie, it's not anything of your concern to know about what you're going to be breathing in later down the road. You know, the beat just goes on. Now, next, as I mentioned about the corn issue, let's hear Smith talk about the attack, more or less, of the engineered killer corn. Check it out.
Protein, which is now produced inside your gut, perhaps long after you decide never to eat genetically modified soy again. Well, it may be an allergen. Because that soy protein, that protein that was designed for herbicide tolerance, was never part of the human food supply. And we don't know if it's an allergen. And there's no way to guarantee that it's not, because typically you need to feed it to people over a period of time before they have an allergic response, and they don't do that with a subset of the population. Instead, they have a decision tree, which is criteria which minimize the likelihood that these foreign proteins that are created in GM crops will produce allergic reactions. The World Health Organization has a decision tree. Turns out the soy fails that criteria. And according to the WHO, shouldn't have been introduced because it has two sections in its protein sequence that They're identical to known allergens. So this might be why GM soy, soon after it was introduced to the UK, soy allergies skyrocketed by 50%. Now, there may be other reasons why soy allergies skyrocketed by 50%. You see, the process of inserting a gene into a DNA is not like attaching a Lego. It causes dramatic and violent changes in the DNA. And also you grow it from tissue culture, and that adds another set of mutations. So typically the process of putting a gene in can cause mutations around the insertion site. In fact, the soy was found years after it was introduced to the market, has a section on it near the insertion that's scrambled. Never before been part of nature, not part of normal DNA of soy, not part of what was put in. That is large enough to theoretically create its own protein or to perhaps interfere with expressions of other genes, and that might be why we have a 50% increase in soy allergies in the UK after GM soy was introduced. But also the process of insertion can kill genes. It can delete them or turn them off. So if there was a gene that was regulating the expression of another gene that was creating an allergen, and if that's gone, you may have an increase in allergens. In fact, if you look at Monsanto's own study, there's an increase in a known soy allergen called trypsin inhibitor by 27%. If you look at the part of that study that they omitted and didn't put in, but was later found out and made public, among cooked soy, it was threefold or sevenfold increase in this known allergen in genetically modified soy. So it could be because of the deletion of a gene, or the promoter, which actually turns on the foreign gene that you put in. Turns out it can possibly turn on other genes at random inside the DNA, permanently, 24/7, around the clock, causing an overproduction of an allergen, or a toxin, or a carcinogen, or an anti-nutrient, or something good. We don't know. It's genetic roulette. Also, the very process of putting in a gene can change the levels of expression of the other genes in the DNA. A single study with a gene chip analyzing the genes found that when a single gene was put in, up to 5% of the genes changed their levels of expression. That is enormous. Because not only do you have potentially hundreds of different protein levels changed, but their reactions and all the metabolic pathways and the way they interact and the way they interact, it's incredible, the permutations and the possibilities of the problems. But then you have the mutations. The actual gene that you insert can be truncated. It can be mixed up. It can be spread up with other materials. By the time you finish growing it from tissue culture, you can typically have hundreds or thousands of mutations up and down the genome. They don't test for all those things. Any single mutation could theoretically be lethal or dangerous. Mutations happen, but not normally to this extent. So, coming back to the genes inside our gut, maybe that protein is an allergen. However, maybe it's not the same protein they intended. Recently, government laboratories in Europe looked at the sequence of 5 genetically modified crops and found that the gene sequence that had been registered for those crops and the gene sequence that they discovered in their laboratory were not the same. This indicates that the insertion, that the transgene, is not stable. And if it's not stable, it means it may be producing an amino acid sequence, a protein, different than the one that was intended and tested. So inside our gut, we may have the 2003 version of the soybeans from Indiana and the 2004 version of the Iowa soybeans where I'm from. Who knows? Who knows what the impact will be?
So once again, you got a good description of the game of death, the Russian roulette that these killer tomato industry players are playing. When you have a government lab in Europe, not here, look at the gene sequence and see that it ends up not being the same, and that the transgene process is not the same, and who knows what else is producing amino acids and all of this other type of stuff, then this helps outline how little we know about the insertion process and the overall response when many of these processes are going down the pike. But this type of stuff is not getting reported in America properly. It's not the whole tone of anyone trying to challenge this genetically engineering steamroller is classified as, you know, some kind of biological Luddite. And since the structures within this society see this as a profit machine, making machine, that they are able to control more and more resources by this because of them having patents and all of these things that are tied together with this, and how they can lay claim since they are now manipulating the sequences themselves. So other people who grow it, whether their areas have been pollinated with this junk or not, they can lay claim to you know, what these people are growing, and thereby make a claim for the more profits out of. You can see how the whole engine of profits takes place, even though all evidence shows that mutations within the gene sequence and other things are taking place that are beyond, at this point in time, our understanding. Now, down the road, people have even a better understanding, but once again, as I was saying before, it'll be too late because of what these plunderers have done. Now let's go into the attack of the killer corn aspect, as these engineers of death steamroll ahead. Check this out.
What about corn, engineered to produce its own insecticide? What if the gene that creates the insecticide transfers to gut bacteria? It could theoretically turn our intestinal flora into living pesticide factory. Now, if you ask the Environmental Protection Agency, which regulates pesticide-producing products, what about BT? What about this possibility? Well, they'll tell you genes are destroyed during digestion. They'll tell you the protein is destroyed during digestion, and they'll tell you, maybe, as some scientists tried to tell me in South Africa, that the BT toxin will only work with insects. Even if it doesn't transfer into our gut bacteria, when we eat genetically modified corn, we're eating the BT toxin. So what do we know about the BT toxin? They fed it to mice, and the mice reacted in their immune system as if they had been fed cholera toxin. So it did survive digestion, it did impact. They also had an immune response in their blood, potentially related to allergens. They also had abnormal and excessive cell growth in their ileum, the lower part of the small intestine. So it did survive digestion, and it did interact with mammals. In fact, the spray, this BT, which is used in organic agriculture, which is 100 or 1,000 times less concentrated than the stuff produced by the corn, when farm workers were exposed to that, they developed apparent allergic symptoms and an immune response in their blood. Filipinos living next to a BT cornfield developed skin, respiratory, and intestinal reactions and fever while the corn was pollinating, while they were breathing in the pollen. Blood tests confirmed an immune response in the blood, not guaranteeing that the disease was from the pollen, but supporting that. the following year, again, during the time of pollination, the mysterious disease returned. So this puts genetically modified crops into a different category. It's pesticides. But it's pesticides that can end up being produced inside us for the long term. We don't know if this is true. But I think it should be studied before we start eating it.
So when you have a situation, as Smith was pointing out, that basically when you eat BT corn, you're eating BT toxins, and that the proof, scientific proof, has shown that it does survive digestion, and that it does interact with other mammals, yet the dogma that's still spun out there is that it's okay to eat this stuff. And you know, a few times a year you'll hear about how some supply in America was accidentally contaminated. Accidentally contaminated. This is as accidental as the New York Times waiting a year before releasing the story about Boy George's spying, only after an employee who had left the Times was about to release a book on the spying. So by the time it gets out, they've already saturated the field with their network in the same way that these corrupt killer tomato industries have saturated much of the world's landscape with their poison. Once again, exposing that they have to go. Now, let's look into what happened in the UK with a pro-GE government behind them when they put these killer tomato food products under the testing microscope. So check this out.
The pro-GM UK government intended to convince the consumers there to eat GM foods by putting them through a rigorous long-term feeding trial criteria, checklist, protocol. So they put out a grant for $3 million and they assigned it to one of 28 different scientific teams that applied. This team was run by Dr. Arpad Pusztai, the world's leading scientist in his field, working at one of the world's leading nutritional research laboratories and leading ultimately a 20-member research team over three different institutes. And he created with them the protocol for testing. And he took a sample, he took a potato and genetically engineered it to produce an insecticide, not the BT, a similar one. And this one was an insecticide that he had studied for 7 years and knew was harmless to humans and to rats. So he fed the rats the potato genetically engineered to produce an insecticide, and he fed rats potato mixed in with the insecticide, and he fed rats potatoes. In all cases, he balanced the energy and protein, and he also had raw potatoes, boiled potatoes, and cooked potatoes. The rats that ate the genetically modified potato had problems. The rats that ate the potatoes that were spiked with the insecticide didn't have those problems. So what was the cause? Somehow, the process of genetic engineering caused these problems, is what most people believe. Now, he went public with his concerns and was a hero for about 2 days at his prestigious institute, and then allegedly two phone calls were placed in the Prime Minister's office, forwarded through the receptionist to the director. Next morning, Dr. Pusztai was fired from his job after 35 years, silenced with threats of a lawsuit. The 20-member research team was disbanded, and they did not implement the long-term safety testing protocols. They put out a series of statements criticizing Pusztai and his research in an apparent attempt to protect the industry. He eventually was invited to speak before Parliament, which allowed him to get his data back and to be able to speak. The material is now published in The Lancet. and it remains the most in-depth animal feeding study ever conducted on genetically modified foods. Now, I asked Dr. Pusztai, what was your most shocking moment? Turns out it was not being fired from his job. It was not discovering the extent of damage to the rats from his potatoes. It happened a few months earlier. He was still in good standing, a pro-GM scientist with over 300 publications to his name, 12 books, had worked in the laboratory of a Nobel Prize winner. The director of the Institute, Professor Philip James, walked into Pusztai's office and put down a stack of about 700 pages. They called in Pusztai's wife, Susan, who was also a senior researcher there. He said, these are the 6 or 7 submissions from the biotech industry. They're genetically modified crops given to the UK government for approval. The agriculture minister is meeting in Brussels for a vote and wants a scientific opinion on these submissions. The reason that the professor had these was because he was a member of the 12-member committee that approves genetically modified crops for the UK. Now, Arpad Pusztai looked at his director and looked at the stack and looked back at his director and realized this man would never read these many pages, nor would any member of the committee. They were very busy men. They were committee men, not working scientists. He and his wife, however, had spent the previous 2 years designing the ideal testing protocol for genetically engineered food. They were among the most qualified people on earth to evaluate the stack that was just handed to them. They said, how much time do we have? The professor said, 2.5 hours. So, they got to work. They looked immediately at the design and the data. And that was the most shocking moment. Arpad said to me, it was a turning point in my life. I realized that what I was doing and what industry was doing was diametrically opposed. I was doing safety studies. They were doing as little as possible to get their foods on the market as quickly as possible. He described the research as bad science, poor science, flimsy, superficial. It shocked him. He called the minister, and he said, I wasn't planning to give you a strong recommendation after only 2.5 hours, but I must say there is definitely not enough information to allow these foods to be fed to human beings or to animals. The minister said, I don't know why you're telling me this. These foods were approved 2 years ago. They're already on the market. They didn't want Arpad to contribute to the approval process. They just wanted a scientific opinion, perhaps from the only scientist that read it. A few weeks later, Arpad realized the extent of the damage to his rats from his potatoes. Potentially precancerous cell growth in the digestive tract. Smaller brain, smaller liver, smaller testicles, partial atrophy of the liver, damaged immune system. He realized if those potatoes had been tested by industry, they would have made it to the market. Because they didn't test for any of that stuff. What's worse, however, is that the soy and the corn and tomatoes that did make it to market, based on that superficial study, were never tested for those things. And were created from the same process they used to create the potato. And remember, it wasn't the insecticide that caused the problem. It was likely the process. And we still have never seen a single commercialized genetically modified crop undergo the same rigorous studies that the potato went through. The rats eating the cooked potatoes develop these symptoms over the equivalent of 10 human years. Every day. We don't know what the formula might be for human beings, if there is one. We don't know if these things are causing these type of problems. And no one is monitoring to find out.
What more can one say about a barbaric society and barbaric institutions within these societies that basically put so much of a premium on corporate profit over the health of the masses? When you have a situation where, as pointed out, there's not any commercial food product that is genetically modified, genetically engineered, that has gone through the type of rigorous scientific process that those potatoes went through under the scientists, that just outlines fundamentally where their priorities are. And the mere fact that they threw him some stuff that they want, a stack of papers that they wanted him to research, gave him 2.5 hours when he did a quick job in finding some of the fundamental flaws with his partner, and called them to tell them this is a dangerous product, do not put it on the market, only to find out that it was approved 2 years ago, shows that this whole thing's a sham. It shows how, you know, when they play games with seat belts and all of that stuff, that's not to save people's lives. That's for the insurance company. It's all, everything is manipulated. The insurance companies don't want to pay, so they want seat belts in. The states and cities don't mind because they can more or less fine people and give people tickets for it. But it's not about anyone's safety that they're concerned about. The propaganda that they will put out, in the same way that they'll propagandize us about these food products. But it's right there. In hardcore documented evidence. Where the rats that ate the GE potatoes had serious problems. And as I've went into... also concerning the rat that were genetically fed modified soy, how that led to a 55.6 mortality rate on the offspring. Once again, it outlines just how sick this whole mechanism really is. Now, let's go into the tricks that these killer tomato Dr. Frankenstein corporations use concerning the studies. Check this out.
Give you a little glimpse about some of the shock that ARPOD experienced reading the industry studies. I've spent some time with him and other scientists reverse engineering these so-called science studies by industry, where they overcooked corn samples 4.5 times before checking to see if the protein survived. Where Monsanto, compared to the WHO standard, added 1,250 times the amount of pepsin, digestive enzyme, to the test tube to see if the protein survived, and added a stronger acid. Where Monsanto instructed a laboratory to use an obsolete detection method, where serious differences in nutritionals were omitted from studies, where they used mature animals instead of young ones, diluted the soy 12 to 1 or 10 to 1 or 6 to 1 before feeding it to the animals, never weighed the organs, used too much protein, etc., etc., etc. In spite of the rigged research to avoid finding problems, we still see problems. Recently, a German court forced Monsanto to make public a study on corn that we eat, and the rats that were fed this corn developed lesions in their kidneys and livers, 53% reduction in young red blood cells, white blood cell problems, higher blood sugar levels, and increased basophils, which may indicate allergic response, and no follow-up study was done. Rats that were fed genetically modified soy developed misshapen nuclei in their liver cells, 70% reduction in enzymatic digestive enzymes from the pancreas. Twice the number of chickens died when they were fed a certain genetically modified corn. A farmer in Germany says that a certain genetically modified corn, when he fed that exclusively to his cows, 12 died, others had to be killed because they were sick. I've spoken to a number of farmers in the Midwest, there's about 25 now, that say that when they feed certain varieties of genetically modified corn to their pigs, the pigs become sterile, or have false pregnancies, or give birth to bags of water. So if the human being eating the genetically modified food were having any one of these problems, would we see it?
And do they want us to see it? And the answer, of course, is no. They do not want us to see the reality that they and the devastation that they are inflicting on us. Any more than they want you to really see and grasp what's going on in Iraq, or what's going on in the Congo, or what their partners are doing to the masses of black folks in the Sudan. It's all the same game. Deceit, deception, destruction. Now, part of the reason why I'm also doing this is that for slaves to be in a true revolt, or as best of a revolt as possible, slaves need to be as healthy as possible. And, you know, there's various things like, if you go to eatwellguide.com, it's all one word, eatwellguide.com, you'll see that it has a number of places. All you have to do is punch in your zip code. So you could punch in, like for us, 94607, and you'll see within a 10-mile, 20-mile, however many you want, mile radius, the various places within your locale that serve different products, various meats, beef, chicken, dairy, eggs, vegetable products, so on and on, that are not modified up, processed out, etc., etc. It also has a category for restaurants and other things. So all you have to do is go to eatwellguide.com to see that. Seedsofdeception.com is Jeff's website. It's Seeds, S-E-E-D-S, of Deception.com, all one word. And outline stuff. Now, whether you're a vegetarian, a vegan, or on a like a paleo diet, which basically means a diet that consumes of a hunter-gatherer type of diet. So if you were on the Nile Valley, you consumed, in many other regions, a large number of meat products and naturally grown food before the agricultural system was developed. Because a number of the agricultural systems and vegetables are a combination of products that weren't introduced into humans until after the agrarian agricultural system was outlined. So for many people, they found that they have problems eating even some of the vegetables and products that have arisen since the agricultural system was developed, because humans ate primarily diets that preceded the agricultural system, which is only started about 10,000 years ago. So all of these types of things are thrown out just to give one an idea of various ways of looking into one's health beyond GE and other death products. But let's wrap it up with Smith talking about the intense lobbying campaign network by the Killer Tomato Corporation.
Now, the biotech industry has an incredible marketing and PR machine. It is, as the New York Times said, their influence in government is legendary. Their influence around the world is legendary. And I see it. I've been in six continents, and I've been speaking to government officials. It's amazing how competent they've been on that score, where they've been so incompetent on the science. And an example, an indicator of their level of competence at creating this energy around why we need GM, was revealed by Dan Glickman, former Secretary of Agriculture under Clinton, who was a big biotech cheerleader who marched around Europe saying, you must have our biotech products. Before stepping down, he was interviewed, and he said, What I saw from the probiotic side was the attitude that the technology was good and that it was almost immoral to say that it wasn't good. Because it was going to solve the problems of the human race and feed the hungry and clothe the naked. And if you're against it, you're Luddites. You're stupid. And that, frankly, was a side our government was on. He said you felt like you were an alien, disloyal by trying to present an open-minded view. This is an indication of an incredibly effective campaign.
And it's a campaign that's back has to be broken. For their campaign is PR propaganda that is not based, as we've heard, in our interest, but is basically based in our exploitation. You can feel it right down in your gut. Hold on a sec. That's going to wrap it up, Slave, tonight. Remember, for a slave to be in proper resistance, a slave has to know what he and she consumes, not only intellectually, but internally, from a food standpoint. Until the next time, Slave Island.